Weekend Breakfast on 702. Let's walk the talk.
Good morning to you, Mr. Tucker. You know, I had the pleasure. This is my third weekend consecutively in KwaZulu-Natal, right? 3 weekends in a row I've been in KwaZulu-Natal. And I think my first weekend, I was very lucky to be able to sit in, either drive or sit in some really lovely vehicles. So I wanted to brag about that with you this morning. But I think we're having a far more a far more serious conversation, though.
Taking into
account that 61 unroadworthy scholar transport vehicles were taken off the roads during intensified operations in the far west last week. Just this past week alone, this has happened. I mean, that's very worrisome, man.
Definitely. You know, what prompted this was I was on my way to work and coming down the one main road here, seen an accident, and there's a whole lot of kids everywhere. Stopped, pulled over, and noticed the scholar transport vehicle sitting basically in a ditch. And got out, obviously, to assist. And a couple of things stood out here. So, number one, the vehicle was an old Caravelle, white Caravelle. No license disc visible. The driver was running around trying to obviously see what he could do. There were 22 kids in this vehicle, so it was overloaded already. There were no safety belts in this vehicle, none whatsoever. So what they do is they put the bigger kids on the seats in the front, and they put the smaller kids, if you remember the old Caravelles, the boot used to be above the engine. So they put all the small kids over there. And basically what had happened was is that the scholar transport vehicle had turned, right, without, turned when he wasn't supposed to turn, and a vehicle coming down the hill hit him into another car, and his vehicle then rolled into a ditch. So obviously he stopped to help. And the thing that I found most challenging here was that this man had no information on any of the kids' parents. We literally had to call the schools and find out from the schools who these kids are and ask them to alert the parents. Of those 22 kids, with a little girl, she couldn't have been more than 4 years old. She had bit her tongue and it had split. And we needed to get hold of her mom because they needed to take her to hospital, obviously, to get her tongue stitched and the rest of it. And there were other kids there, that one kid had broken his arm. And, you know, the kids were just battered and bruised. And I found it shocking that this man had no information on the parents. So we spent the morning calling all the parents. We called the schools, obviously, the school. The one school I called, when I spoke to the lady there, she said, look, is it a white vehicle? And she mentioned some stickers that were on the vehicle. I said, yes. She says, you know, we know that car. The driver of that vehicle is very reckless. So to me, I said, but if you know that, why are you still permitting this person to do transport? So this is basically the whole thing that prompted this conversation.
It's a very important conversation. Look, mate, I mean, I grew up, in let's call it a not rich community, right? And it was common that some of the kids, especially at primary school level, I think the high school kids, all of us were sort of left to walk to school. But the primary school kids were in a school that was a little further. So there was the whole notion of one or two people within the community. There was a guy that had a station wagon. There was another lady that had, you know, those old Toyota Corolla sedans, which comparatively is a tiny little car now, right? And all these kids would pile into the vehicle and sit on each other's laps. And it wasn't the longest possible drive. But, I mean, in retrospect, I'm thinking if something went wrong, geez, it would have been horrific. But the point is that ultimately you find that it's low-income communities where people can't necessarily afford, the school can't afford a bus, right? The kids are also so scattered that you end up having some person in the community saying, listen, I have a vehicle of some sort, and lo and behold, what I'm going to do is I'm going to transport the kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think
so it's really about affordability, isn't it?
Yes, that you hit the nail on the head there. That's the crux of the issue or the biggest problem here. So if you look at the regulations around this, and I'm looking at the Western Cape, I've looked at Gauteng, and they're all pretty similar. But essentially what you've got here is that the vehicle needs to obviously be less than 12 years old. Okay, the vehicle's required to have roadworthy testing done every 6 months. Obviously, it needs to have a special vehicle fitness certificate. Obviously, because it's transporting people, there's a more in-depth look on the vehicle. And this is the one that gets me here. It's clearly spelled out that the vehicle must have a seat belt for every child, right? And a car seat for every child younger than 3 years old.
I'm sorry for cutting you, in there, Warren. And I get the general gist. And I mean, all of those safety regulations make absolute sense, right? But what my question is, right, is that we talk about rural and township communities here. So if we talk about rural and township communities where it's literally, let's call a thing here, where it's if I have a bucky, a kumbi, a car, as long as I have a vehicle with four wheels, and the kids have a long distance to get to school, I'm going to be that guy that's going to capitalize on being the scholar transporter, right? And then the problem is that, you know, all too often it's also a bare minimum. That guy's profit margins are barely enough to cover his or her, petrol expenses. The point that I'm making is, are the regulations aligned to what it is that you're hoping to achieve in terms of safety and getting the kids to school?
Look, I would say this, right? It's like everything in South Africa. We have very good regulations and rules around most of what happens on our roads. It's the implementation, and obviously, like you've said, you've got rural areas, you've got very poor infrastructure, number one, but very poor schools. And in situations like that, that should be where the government subsidies should apply in order to keep the scholars safe. Because unfortunately, I'm not saying this to be funny, but we cannot use the excuse that, okay, this is a poor community, so therefore the rules don't apply. Because those are people in that community, they are kids in that community that should have the same access or the same safety protocols applied to them as kids in a more affluent community. And that's simply where government should step in. But on that note, I mean, surely as a parent, right, and you look at the situation, the bare minimums would apply. I mean, you know, there was a horrible accident in Pomona with one of the trucks that came through. The driver was asleep, and there was a scholar transport bucky that had a whole lot of kids on the back of the bucky, and this truck just plowed into the bucky and basically killed everybody on that vehicle, you know, stuff like that. And at the end of the day, I'm not saying that had they been in a combi, they would have been safe for that whole other conversation. But, you know, we need to look at these things as a society and look at ways to try and get around what is happening and get our students as safely as possible to schools.
But I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Warren. I mean, it is about government and the role that government then ultimately plays. And I'm thinking back to, again, when I was growing up. And unfortunately, it was a different time. Obviously, we had, different standards for different communities. But there was obviously the school bus system that was employed where children were being carted around. And let's be honest, it wasn't, you know, there was definitely no parity or equality in that space. Because let's be honest, if you were a black kid, you weren't going to have a school bus. But I mean, that for me is something that makes sense in a scenario where you have a community that has a significant distance between the school and the community, and especially if you have young children that can't walk those distances safely, surely that's where government needs to now start doing a bit of an audit and saying, listen, the kids need to walk, or the kids are at least five kilometers away from school. So on that basis, geez, we need to make a plan to get them to school. And provide said necessary support.
100%. I mean, if in that specific area you know that there are, let's say, 50 or 60 learners that have to come from a quite a distance where it's not advisable for them to walk to school. Surely there should be a situation. Surely there is a bus company in the community or a transport company that could partner with government, do it safely, and be subsidized to get these kids to school. You know, there are a myriad of ways that something like this could work out. When I was growing up, I used to hop on a train at Florida Station, drive to Bosman Station, and walk from there to my school. That was St. Barnabas. But again, that was a different time. It was safe to do that. I have a daughter. I would not let my daughter ride on any of the trains or walk to school just purely based on the way the country is right now. And it's also sad because they would miss out on a part of growing up, a little bit of independence growing up, you know. So, again, you know, this conversation can it can keep going. But the crux of the matter is you know, if you do have your kids on using scholar transport, right, please put a little card, fill your information out on that card, put it into your child's bag. So that should something happen, at least there's a way for people to get a hold of you. I mean, a lot of the kids that we spoke to, they didn't know their parents' cell numbers. They just know mom and dad's name. But, you know, further from that, us probing them and asking them, okay, what's mom's cell number, what's dad's number, they didn't know. So, you know, that also hampered them getting to the hospitals because, you know, the response, the ambulance, the companies that responded, ER24, the government guys, they were all willing to help, but they've got rules and regulations around how they can do their job 100%. And
tell you what, Warren, you're going on to something that I think we need to, you know, pay some attention to because you have some practical sort of measures that we, interim measures, for lack of a better term, that we can talk about. But looking at the time now, it's 19 minutes past 7 o'clock.
You and 702 have something in common.
We can't hit pause.
You're always on the move.
And our conversations are always flowing.
So when the commitments of everyday life don't allow you to stop and tune in,
allow us to keep you connected.
On 702.co.za.
All the interviews,
news,
and conversations you missed.
All just a click away.
Stay connected to your world.
By staying connected to your station.
Because even though you can't hit pause,
you can always hit 702.co.za.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Anytime.
Anywhere.
If you're looking to sell your car or bucky, there's only one option at wheelie.co.za, South Africa's fastest growing online car sales platform. You get the best cash prize for your car or bucky. Selling your car anywhere else is quite frankly throwing your money away. Simply upload your car on wheelie.co.za and get the best cash prize. It's simple, fast and safe. Don't just sell your car, wheelie it.
No one just buys a car. You may go to a dealership and consider all your options available in one place.
Maybe I'll get a family sedan and customize it just the way I want it. I'm looking for safety features like airbags for the family, of course.
So why should investing be any different? Glacier by Sanlam's investment platform offers you the widest choice of local and global funds from different fund managers that you can mix and match all in one place. And it lets you customize your investment exactly the way you want it. So you can enjoy your life exactly the way you want to. Ask your financial advisor why you're not with Glacier. Glacier Financial Solutions and Sanlam Life Insurance are licensed financial services providers.
The crazy stores, the deals galore, and everything you need. From tinsel presents, wrapping, and a star for your Christmas tree. We've got all sorts of games and sports, many toys to buy. Stationery, arts, and crafts, come on and don't be shy. No need to panic shop, we're your one-stop Christmas spot. Your table will be dressed, and you will not be stressed. When Christmas Eve is here, you'll want to sing and cheer. I got everything at the crazy store, and I can't wait for next year.
Hey, you never know what you might find this Christmas.
Call Weekend Breakfast now on 011
883 0702.
So yes, Warren, we started off a conversation talking about obviously scholar transport, right? But we turned it into sort of solving the socioeconomic ills and disparities and inequalities within South Africa, right? But I mean, unfortunately, that's what this stuff translates to inevitably. But you had some really practical sort of things that you touched on there. I mean, just speaking to that accident that you had witnessed and the fact that something as simple and as basic as a four-year-old that bit through a tongue that would be in an unimaginable amounts of pain, not being able to receive treatment because obviously someone needs to provide consent, informed consent. And the only person is a guardian or a parent. And if the child who's four can't remember mommy's cell phone number, the person who was tasked to drive them is not only reckless with his driving, but also then doesn't even have basic information of the parents. I mean, geez, these are quick wins, low-hanging fruits, as the business people would say, that can be dealt with.
Definitely. And I mean, with that, obviously finding out from him where the child was going to be dropped and then contacting the school, I mean, that was the only way we could get that sort of information. And you know, like everything in South Africa, there's consequence to something like this. I mean, should he not be sort of qualified to transport scholars? I mean, there's penalties around it. I mean, there's fines. It's 7,000 rand to release your vehicle if it's a first offense because they impound the vehicle. 10,000 rand a second, 15,000 rand a third, you know, 25,000 rand for every time thereafter. So there's obviously incentive for you to get this right. I mean, if you look at the requirements for the driver needs to have a professional driving permit, the PDP, a valid operating license, obviously a tamper-proof ID book, but a first aid certificate and a course in either advanced or defensive driving. These are requirements to do scholar transport. Now, if we look at it and we take it hard and fast, most people that do scholar transport, like you said earlier, it's somebody that's got a vehicle that said, okay, look, I'll take them to school, and they're trying to provide the community with a service. And in that, I mean, there's also got to be public liability insurance here because you are transporting a kid, you are transporting a human being. Anything can happen. So, yeah, if I look at this and I look around me, I can't say I can look at it and say that people are complying 110%. You know,
the one thing that stands out for me automatically is that these are businesses that people are running ultimately, and the owner, you know, the onus then sits with the business owner, right? The person with the vehicle that's transporting these kids. And I mean, with all due respect, in as much as your profit margins may be lower, because again, we're talking about a lower income community. The fact of the matter is that if you are going to embark and you are going to be that person to pick up your hand and say, I'm going to actually take your kids from point A to school under the assumption that I'm actually A, going to get them there alive, B, uninjured, C, untraumatized, surely then you need to take up those responsibilities then. And I'm in full agreement with you that we should stop sort of making money the preventative measure here, because alternatively you will have to pay, I don't know, 7,000 rands every time, for the first time you stuff up, and then another, 10,000 rands after that, and then eventually you get to the 25,000 rands thereafter level. So it also then speaks to enforcement, isn't it?
100%. I mean, the Metro cops that arrived there, there were two ladies, they were very professional. When I probed them and asked them, look, what is going to happen to this gentleman? I mean, there's no license disc on this vehicle. These kids that flew everywhere here that are injured from this. So the lady was very clear that we have to charge him because this is reckless and negligent driving. And also, she said very clearly, this vehicle that he's using is not supposed to carry scholars. So there again, now the driver's in hot water for obviously him wanting to run a business. And, you know, at the end of the day, the law will apply. And that's again, besides the parents that kids might have been injured that might want to take up or have an issue with the driver, I doubt he has public liability insurance.
No, for sure. That I can guarantee you. There's no such thing. If you were to ask him about that, he would ask you, what is that? Final point, though, and this is going back to the issue of enforcement, because you touched on it, right? Is that, great at the time that now the collision has happened, now that the accident has happened, now you want to tell us about the fact that there's going to be public liability, not public liability, but that there's going to be consequences. He's going to be charged. He's going to be done ABCD. I bet you, though, that particular gent has driven 10, 20, 50, 100 times past our traffic officials, and they've just sort of let it go. And the only time that we respond is when we have a tragedy of this nature, if not worse.
Yes, definitely. You know, South Africa is a reactive country. We are not a country that is preemptive. We wait for something to happen, and then people react to that. So the thing here is, and you hit the nail on the head, because I've seen it, where the taxi's doors are falling off, but they'll drive past the metro cops, and the metro cops are not interested. They look the other way. They're not even looking at the vehicle. And you sitting in your civilian vehicle are sitting and looking at this and wondering, but how is this allowed, or how is this legal? I mean, you see vehicles that crab on the road because they've been so badly accident damaged and put back on the road. It shouldn't be there. So definitely South Africa per se is a reactive country. They like the words consequence management. You deal with the issue afterwards. You don't preempt it. So, for example, in where situations, something like scholar transport, these vehicles, again, should be roadworthy every 6 months. The mere fact that you're transporting people and other lives, it should be so strictly controlled that you should never, ever see a vehicle like this transporting children. The minute a metro cop sees a vehicle transporting kids, they need to pull that vehicle off immediately and check if that vehicle complies. If it doesn't, it's a simple thing. Take it off the road.
No, I hear you 100%. Warren, it was great chatting to you, mate. All the best. And, I know that we didn't solve South Africa's problems, but, I mean, we initiated the conversation. And hopefully this gets taken seriously. Hopefully the officials, the Minister of Transport is listening to this. The Department of Basic Education is listening to this. And at some stage, something is going to be done about this. All the best to you, Warren.
You too.